Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Jeff Parles of ESPN Las Vegas will join us. We will go over the Major League Baseball season, get his thoughts, sort of like what I did the other day, give all 12 playoff teams a World Series prediction, get his thoughts on some of the awards, and get his thoughts on the Friday Sweet 16 games, which I will give my thoughts on coming up here. Recording this before the games, I like doing the pod where I can give my reaction to the games that just happened, and ideally that's how it would go, but just the games, I mean, the games don't start. So the later games, you know, 10, 10:30 on the East Coast, by the time they end, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. It's just very hard to record it, get it up in time, turn it around. So it will be just a preview here of the Friday games, and then we'll talk to Parles here coming up. By the time you listen to this, the Mets-Pirates game may or may not have ended. Boy, it took about 3 hours to get through the first five innings. Skeens was not as bad as his record, as his final box score here is going to indicate, because Cruz really cost him 3 runs and a million pitches here. I know you're going to see the box score for people that didn't watch the game. Oh my God, he was awful. He was not good. He certainly wasn't sharp. Walked a couple guys, gave a couple hits, but that should have been 2-2 after the first. Cruz turned a pop-up and what should have been probably a sack fly at worst into a 3-run triple, then botched the next one, turned that from an out into a single. The inning should have been out over there. So Skeens' line a little misleading, but with Judge struggling on Wednesday, Skeens struggling on Thursday, I know the thought has come up and crossed my mind that maybe these guys, there's a little letdown from the WBC. They were all fired up to play in that. Now a little hard time, you know, adjusting to just one game of 162. I'm not sure if I buy it, but it is something that crossed my mind. Of course, very small sample, but it's something that you know, people have pointed out, something that I've noticed. So keep it in mind if you want to, you know, play accordingly, but I wouldn't completely overreact to that, you know, as of yet. But let's get to the Sweet 16 here. We'll do baseball with Parles. We'll do Sweet 16 with Parles. Let's get to the Friday games. The game I'm probably most excited about, St. John's and Duke. It's interesting. All the people that were picking against St. John's this time last week, including me, taking Northern Iowa plus the points. I thought they'd beat Northern Iowa, but I like Northern Iowa plus the points, are now taking St. John's plus the points against Duke, including me. So everyone was felt like against them last week, and it didn't work. Now everyone's on them against Duke, which, you know, sometimes that is a dangerous way to you know, handicap these games and to be betting. If you're not there for the wedding, don't be there for the funeral. That being said, it's a lot of points. You got to figure they got to turn Duke over, create some turnovers, get some easy buckets that way. Just them scoring in traditional half-court offense against Duke, probably not the easiest thing, but they've got the bodies with Dylan Mitchell to hang in the paint against Boozer. Make it a half-court ugly game. Make it a 3 or 4 point game in the last 5 minutes, and then steal it late. Who knows? Duke spit up a game they never should have lost last year against Houston. 2 years ago against East State, they lost a game in the tournament in the Elite Eight. They had no business losing when they had a lead in that game, too. So they've had some tough tournament losses under Shire. And I do think Patino has enough here to keep it close. Again, it worries me everyone's on him, but I will take St. John's plus the points. The other game in that region, UConn and Michigan State. I'm going to go with UConn. It's hard to trust them. They're so up and down. You know, losing to Marquette, losing to Creighton. On the other hand, they do really well out of conference, including this year where they beat Illinois and they beat Florida and they won in Kansas. So that it's really hard to put your thumb on them, to put your finger on them. It's just a tough team to predict. But betting Hurley in this tournament out of conference is usually, at least it has been, a pretty good bet here. He's won 15 out of 16 tournament games. He's covered 15 out of 16 tournament games. He has been really good, like I said, out of conference. You figure the shooting at some point comes back, because Ball and Mullins, these guys have not made shots. Meanwhile, Michigan State has hit a bunch of threes here, and that's really not their forte as a team. I will say UConn gets home, and we get, I'll say we get a UConn-Duke final. I'm rooting for UConn-St. John's. Part four would be fun, but hey, UConn-Duke would be a lot of fun too, but that would be a hell of a regional final on Sunday afternoon. That would be a lot of fun to get UConn versus Duke for the first time in a long time. We haven't gotten those teams, you know, facing off in a while. We've gotten them a few times in the Final Four. We got them in the championship game in 99. The Final Four in 04. It's probably some time along the way I'm not thinking of, but it'd be fun to have a rematch here. I'm rooting for UConn-St. John's, but I think I'll go UConn-Duke in terms of a final. The other games, I have a hard time seeing Bama hang with Michigan. I know the recipe for them is just shoot a million threes and hope you hit half of them and you just math your way to a win. That's always possible. You just, you know, shoot 44 threes, you hit 22 of them, and you know, you end up with 66 points on threes, and maybe Michigan's cold and you win the game that way. But Michigan's going to own the glass, absolutely own the glass. Michigan's happy to run. Michigan's so good defensively. I don't want to lay the 9.5, but a Michigan team total over 92.5 would seem like a pretty good bet. I think they could push 100 here. I like Michigan team total over. If I had to take it or lay it, I guess I would lay it, but it's just so hard with Bama and all the threes they shoot. They can hang around in a game like this and make enough threes to certainly hang. And the other game, Tennessee and Iowa State. Iowa State up down to a 3.5-point favorite. It was 4.5, which I thought was too high. I still think the 3.5 is too high. We'll see if Jefferson plays for Iowa State, their star forward. I don't think he will. Even if he did, I don't think he'll be fully healthy. Tennessee's a great rebounding team, very athletic. Iowa State can't shoot free throws, so if it's a close game, that part doesn't sit well with you if you're laying with Iowa State. I know you're trusting Rick Barnes in the tournament, and it's hard to feel great about that. But I think this game is down to the wire. I liked it a lot more at 4.5 than 3.5, but I still think this line is a tick high here. So I will take Tennessee plus the points here against a shaky free throw shooting Iowa State team. So just wanted to get some picks out there, and we'll get Parle's opinion on all these games, and we'll do a little MLB season preview here as we are underway. Boy, you get some predictions right, you get them some wrong. But I did the Wednesday show saying this Netflix broadcast is going to be a disaster. It's going to be a million people. It's going to be a sideshow. It's going to drag on forever. I mean, that was that's about how it played out. Man, that was tough to watch. They do everything except the baseball game. I mean, Jameson Winston with hot dogs and the guy Kushner screaming and yelling nonstop. It's the people in the bowl. I was doing the VEASAN show with Femi, so I didn't watch too much of it, but was able to see some of it, see out of the corner of my eye, and have one eye on it at least. L. Duncan calling home plate, home base. Tough to take, but it's to be expected, and I think that's pretty much what you're going to get with Netflix with these broadcasts. They did the same thing during football. Bring on a million people. Try to do everything except talk about the game. I guess Bonds was okay. Didn't hear too much of it. And they had CC. Vasgersian's fine. They had Hunter Pence. I didn't hear too much of the broadcast, but it's just the whole production of it is way, way over the top. Of course, the game starts a half hour after they say it's going to start. It's just, it's too much, but they don't really care what any of us think. They're just going to keep doing this. So I don't know how much baseball they have, though. I don't think they have too much baseball this year, but they are slowly dipping their toe in all these sports. And when they have these games, this is what you're going to be getting. So got to just learn to deal with it. Don't turn the game on until it starts and try to ignore the rest of the nonsense, because it is a lot of nonsense. The dancers with the cabs and the whole, it's just a whole sideshow. Really not necessary, kind of tough to take, but that's what you're going to get with these. So let's see here. Let's hopefully get some good games on Friday. Boy, it's a hell of a Friday night. Duke and St. John's, UConn, Michigan State, the other two games. And then by the time we speak again, Sunday show into Monday show, we will have a Final Four set. Kind of hard to believe, but exciting to think about. But we'll see what Jeff Parles thinks, get his thoughts on these games. Baseball, awards, futures, all of that. That is next. This should have been more podcast. We are back. Should have been more podcast. You catch him ESPN Las Vegas. You catch him regularly on this podcast. He is one of our favorites, and he joins us now. Jeff Parles. Jeff, opening day, Sweet 16.
A lot to discuss.
How are you feeling?
A busy day. Yankees already on the board, so Will, they're on pace for 162-0, so you got to be thrilled with that. Hey, it's an amazing day, an amazing weekend, and despite the fact that a lot of people seem to be complaining about, baseball is going up against the Sweet 16, this is great. We just needed a few more games earlier in the day, but this is an amazing sports day.
Yeah, I didn't like that they're going up against the Sweet 16, but then you look at it, and we're recording this before the games take place just so we can get it up. For Friday morning, and the games end so late on Thursday. It's hard with the turnaround. But they did a pretty good job of avoiding the Sweet 16. A lot of the games, especially the games you kind of want to watch, are during the day, so it's not as bad. You get a couple head-to-head, and ideally you'd wait a few days, but it's not the end of the world. Let's start with the Sweet 16. We'll just go game by game here, and I'll get your thoughts. The one that's interesting for the Friday games, a lot of them are interesting. Everyone seems to be on St. John's, and it worries me. All the people that were on Northern Iowa last week and betting against St. John's are now betting on St. John's this week, and they seem to be A lot of hype, a lot of buzz. That being said, I'm not laying the points with Duke. I think St. John's, maybe with their physicality, their pressure can turn them over. I think we're looking at a very close game. I wouldn't be shocked if St. John's upset them. That being said, I'm worried that everyone seems to be on it. What are your thoughts on this one, Duke Lane?
This should be a really, really good game. Should be a really good game. But we kind of saw what the issue, we know what the issues are with St. John's. And we saw it to a T in the Kansas game, where they completely beat the crap out of Kansas for about 33 minutes and then needed Darling to throw in that shot at the buzzer. So their offense scares me so much because they just can't shoot. And I love Zubi, and he's an amazing player. And it's hard to imagine that Patino's going to get a better player at St. John's than Zubi Ejiofor. But when it's all said and done, Duke is just better. That's the biggest issue. Duke is just better. Now, do I want to lay 6.5? No, I do not. Because Duke, quite honestly, very easily could have lost that game to Siena. If Siena could have made a shot over a five-minute period, that whole game might have been different. And look, they looked like Duke in the regular season the last 8 minutes against TCU. But that game was tied until TCU stopped making shots. So that's a testament to Duke's defense as well. So I think Duke wins. I'm not comfortable laying 6.5, but I would be very careful of taking the points for St. John's. Because if you told me Duke won, let's say Duke won the game 73-58 in a game that's like 54-50 with 7 minutes to go, I wouldn't be shocked at all. Duke to win. Duke will win, but
you're picking Duke to win.
It could be ugly, Will. Like, if you tell me this game's like 56-54, I wouldn't be stunned, even though the pace might be a little too quick for that.
How about the other game in the East? UConn and Michigan State, Hurley versus Izzo. It's hard to know what you're going to get out of this UConn team, but by the same token, you know, betting on Hurley in these tournament games when it's non-conference has been a pretty good way to go about it. I know it's different teams, but look, 15 out of 16 he's covered. He's done well out of conference even this year. It would be UConn or nothing for me. I would look towards an under. I think it could be a, you know, half court, kind of a grinded out type of
game.
Well,
let's just start on UConn.
What's your thought
things.
Here, UConn and Michigan
they
State?
They got obviously the all-time game out of Terrace Reed against Furman, and they needed it. If they didn't, they would have lost that game to the 15 seed. And then, boy, what an amazing – I mean, Caravan was so good. Every single time it felt like UCLA was back in the game. We're going to – all right, here's the run to take the lead. Nope, Caravan would hit a big shot, and it'd go right back to, up to 9. From 4 or 3 or whatever it ended up getting closest in the Angry Bowl, as we saw there with Hurley and Cronin. Just the two of them just were complaining incessantly the whole game. But who could have envisioned that, right, Will? I've been very impressed with Michigan State in these first two games of this tournament because they just absolutely destroyed an outclassed North Dakota State team in round one. And even though it got a little hairy at the end with the cover against Louisville, that game was never in doubt. Like, there was no doubt that they were ever going to lose that game, that Michigan State was in control the whole way. This has turned into a team that I didn't really love at the beginning of the year to a team that I think is really, really good and is capable of beating every single team that's left in this tournament. Now, I am scared by the fact that UConn is a random number generator at this point. And as you mentioned, Hurley is unbeatable. I mean, Will, they don't lose in the Sweet 16 or later. Like, it doesn't matter who their coach is. Like, they didn't lose at all. They didn't lose with the Calhoun in 11. Like, they don't lose if they make it to the second weekend. But I think they lose here. I just think Michigan State is the more consistent team. And when it's all said and done, they have the bodies to throw at Reed to slow him down. And I have a very hard time seeing Caravan having another huge game. And the struggles of solo ball for UConn, if he doesn't get his act together, they need him now. They really need him to get to the Final Four or win a title. And he was unplayable against UCLA. If they don't get a good effort out of ball, I think Michigan State wins and advances to play Duke on Sunday.
The thing that would encourage me a little bit, Michigan State has shot the ball extremely well recently, and UConn has shot it so poorly recently. And you figure maybe some of that starts to even out, and UConn eventually is going to hit some shots, and Michigan State starts to miss some shots. So we'll see. Michigan-Bama, Michigan laying 9.5. There's actually been a little love in the market for the underdog. I have a hard time seeing Michigan not score 95-plus points with the tempo, second-chance points. Bama, I think, will get killed on the boards. You always have that concern when you're playing Bama, all right, that they shoot, you know, 43s and they make half of them, and, you know, they just beat you with the math. That being said, I would expect Michigan to roll here. Don't love laying 9.5. Maybe a team total.
I would be shocked if this game is not played in the high 80s or mid-90s. Will, just the tempo is going to be outrageous. Alabama, the only path, you just mentioned the only path for Bama. They have to take 45 threes. They probably got to be close to 50%, and the math problem just becomes very, very hard for anybody to win in that circumstance. But Michigan's just so much better. And look, Bama was in legitimate trouble against Hofstra until the end, and the game got completely out of hand because of the idiotic flagrant on the guy on Hofstra, where just totally lost his mind. That made that an easy cover for Bama in a game that Hofstra was really covering for 38 minutes. But I think Michigan wins comfortably. Don't love the fact that they have to win by 10 if I'm laying it, but I think they do, Will. So Wolverines advance. And I'm a little bit, I got taken off the scent a little bit for Michigan after the Kaysen injury, because I just didn't love how they played down the stretch without him. But first half against Howard notwithstanding, I mean, Howard made 60% of their threes in the first half. That's the only reason that game was close, and then they stopped making threes and Michigan ran them out. That second half against SLU was very, very impressive, Will, where that SLU team is a legitimately good team, and Michigan just ran them off the court in the second half. And we saw that in non-con this year with the Wolverines, and we saw it at times in Big Ten play, where they were kind of, all right, other team makes a bunch of shots in the first half, stays close, and then Michigan just beats the crap out of them in the second 20 minutes. I would not be shocked if that happens in this game either.
Iowa State, Tennessee. Iowa State down to a 3.5-point favorite. I was surprised. This was 4.5 for a lot of the week. I was surprised it was that high. Even 3.5, I think, is a touch high. Tennessee, I know it's trusting Rick Barnes, but they're a monster rebounding team. In a tight game, Iowa State doesn't shoot the free throws well. I can't expect Joshua Jefferson is either playing or healthy enough where he's going to be himself and contribute. I think Tennessee's very live to win the game. I like them plus the points. I think this is more of a coin flip here. What do you think about this game?
I think Iowa State might be better off without Jefferson on the floor. And I know that may sound insane, but the biggest thing that I noticed with them, and they're usually a good spacing team on offense to begin with, but you take him out to basically be the post clog at times. And you saw it in the Kentucky game. They just kicked Kentucky's ass, which is honestly not, in retrospect, it shouldn't have been a surprise. The closest team in the SEC profile to Iowa State was Florida. Kentucky played them three times and never had a lead in any of those three games. But I think Iowa State wins this game. The only concern that I have, and that Virginia-Tennessee game ended up being a coin flip in the end. Tennessee got the break on that replay review. They got the break on that just idiotic flagrant that the refs called. And they won the game in part because of those breaks. I just have a hard time seeing Tennessee getting the breaks again against another team that is actually more talented and better than Tennessee. That Virginia game was a total flip, and the line kind of showed it because Tennessee, I think, was a one-point favorite in that game. I like Iowa State. I don't know if I want to lay it. They're probably a part of a money line parlay of some sort. Duke would probably be the way that I would go for it on a Friday night.
So it sounds like out of this little quad here, out of these four teams, you're looking at Duke and Michigan in the Final Four.
Well,
these,
Michigan will be to Iowa State. I feel pretty good about that. I think Duke's going to lose if it's Michigan State. I really do. I think that's that's the one interesting thing with this region in the East, right? Like, I like John Shire, but he's clearly the fourth best coach in the region. And that's not his own. That's not his fault. Like, you're dealing with Izzo and Pitino who are already Hall of Famers. Hurley has multiple titles and will end up in the Hall of Fame as well. The basketball Hall of Fame committee is much better than the baseball Hall of Fame. They don't seem to keep people out that they don't like for one reason or another. But I think Michigan State's equipped to beat Duke. Will, I really do. They have high-end guard. They have the high-end guard play. They have bigs that they can throw at Boozer and make his life tough. I would actually be very happy to take a few points and a money line on Michigan State against Duke if that's the matchup we end up getting.
All right, let's switch gears here, baseball. Before we get to some predictions, who makes the playoffs? I gave mine the other day, World Series, all that stuff. Any takeaways from the Yankees beating the Giants 7-0? And what would you grade the Netflix performance there on Wednesday night in terms of the presentation?
Fine. The score bunk was too small. The stuff before the game with the taxi cabs on the field was idiotic. I also don't like the game starting 15 minutes late, but I guess opening day, whatever, it's fine. The thing with the drones and the flag was kind of cool, actually, but I don't know if that was an MLB thing or a Netflix thing. Whatever. I'm not a big Vasgersian guy, but you know that. Even though I'll be hearing him in a few minutes as we record this on Thursday morning. He's on the Mets and the Pirates on NBC. Coming up in a few minutes for us. Yeah, pretty brutal, right? Take the red eye from SFO to Kennedy and then maybe get like 4 hours of sleep at a hotel in Queens. Yeah, it's pretty rough. But I don't know, Will. I thought it was whatever. It is what it is. I didn't – C-plus feels about right. And then, look, if the Yankees are going to have the ability to string together hits like they did in that big second inning, then that makes them dangerous. Like, we know Max Fried's good. And really my biggest takeaway that we'll talk about here, I think the NL West behind the Dodgers is really weak this year. I think the Padres are in for a big regression. I think people are trying to talk themselves into Arizona, but I still don't love them. I actually had the Giants second in that division, but they have their issues, Will. They have their issues. Honestly, the Dodgers should win that division by 20-plus games this year, Will. They're just so much better than everybody else out West. And look, I think for the Yankees, like, they're in the best division in baseball. There are four legitimate World Series contenders in that division, which is a very hard draw. But look, if the Yankees miss the playoffs, that obviously should be the end of Boone. But last night's a very good start. It's always better to start 1-0 than 0-1.
All right, let's get into it. I will give you the floor. The American League, your three division winners and your three wild cards. I went my division winners. I went Orioles, Tigers, Rangers. My wild cards, I went Yankees, Red Sox, Mariners. I was torn between the Red Sox and the Blue Jays. I ultimately went Red Sox. Thought about A's, but I just couldn't get the A's in there over these other teams. So you're six.
Man, I thought I had a pretty unique division trio, and you and I have the same division trio, which is kind of amazing, in all honesty. Let's just start with the obvious one. If the Tigers don't win a division this year, it's a joke. And I don't care that Cleveland always exceeds expectations, and they almost assuredly will again. The Tigers are just way better than everybody else in that division. So it's not an excuse. And honestly, Will, 88 should get it done pretty easily in that division. I think the Mariners are really overrated going into this year, Will. Now, I'm not saying that they aren't capable of making the World Series. I'm not saying they won't end up proving me wrong and winning like 97 games. But I still am not fully, even with the addition of Brendan Donovan from St. Louis, I'm still not fully convinced of that lineup. And a team that is built on pitching always scares me because of the injury factor. And I also expect a little bit of a regression for Munoz at the end of that bullpen as well. But Texas feels like a big-time dark horse to me, where, again, I'm contradicting myself because I just said a team built on pitching should scare me. But they had such horrible injury luck last year, Will, that you have to anticipate that their injury luck will regress to the positive a little bit. And that Mackenzie Gore trade's a big deal. That is an unbelievable 1-2-3 that they have down there with DeGrom, Eovaldi, and Gore. Now that Gore's a three, that's a great spot for him. And I just love Seager, man. If Seager can stay healthy, Seager is a legitimate MVP candidate for that team. And also, too, I think, like, we're now 3 years past their title, right? I think they just had the bad luck of those 2 years posted. They actually did a good job of replacing Bochy with a guy who I think is really good in Skip Schumacher. So I have the Rangers there. And then the American League East is so darn difficult, man. There is an argument for all four of those teams to win that division. I just went with Baltimore because I have no idea how Toronto is going to respond early in the year to what happened to them in Game 7 of the World Series. That's one of those, and I know it's bizarre, like, but we see it in the NFL, right? Like, the Super Bowl loser usually has a bad time the next year. And I think that's, like, good we don't point. Always see that in baseball. But I think we can see it with this Baltimore team where they have a really bad like first 2 months, and then by the end of the year to get their act together, make the playoffs, but too little too late to win the division. So I have Baltimore just because I think that lineup, and an Alonso addition is a big deal for them because they were missing that big-time bopping right-handed bat. They obviously have Gunnar who will – I think the MVP is coming from that team in the AL, whether it's Gunnar Henderson or Pete Alonso this year. I think the MVP of the AL is coming from that division – or excuse me, from that team in Baltimore. So I have the Orioles holding off the Jays and holding off the Yankees. So playoff teams – I had Detroit as the one seed. I had the Orioles as the two. I had Texas as the three. I had Toronto as the four, the Mariners as the five, and the Yankees as the six. It's kind of weird to not really think about Houston at all as a playoff team, but I think they're going to miss for the second straight year. And I just think Boston didn't do enough to help their lineup. Their pitching is awesome. Front end, Suarez. I think Sonny Gray will be good there. But I just don't like their lineup enough. So I have Boston just missing out here.
All right. The National League, I went with the Dodgers, the Mets, the Cubs, and then the wild cards. I went with Brewers, Phillies, and I guess I'm on the bandwagon. I went with Pirates with the sixth team. I had a hard time finding fifth and sixth teams. I don't know. The Braves have so many injuries. I'm with you on the Padres. Maybe the Reds do it again, but it's always something with Lodolo and Green. So I don't know. Thought it'd be a little different, but I guess it's not that different. Everywhere you look, people are picking the Pirates. So you're sixth in the National League.
Dodgers are clearly the one seed in this league. They're going to win the division by a lot because of what I said in the open. I think the NL West stinks. I think the Padres are big regress. The Giants aren't good enough, and I'm not buying the Diamondbacks hype from a lot of people out there. All right, now this is where this gets difficult here, Will. Let's get the easy part. I have the Cubs winning the Central. I think the Cubs are really, really good. Now I have some questions about their starting. Will Matthew Boyd have a year like he did last year? Will Shota kind of regress back to the positive? Their lineup has a few questions as well. But I actually think replacing Tucker with Bregman, like spot of the lineup, actually was a really shrewd move. Because as great as Kyle Tucker is, I'd rather have Bregman on my team for a team that I know is going to go to the playoffs just because I know he's going to perform in a playoff circumstance, Will. So I love that trade-off for the Cubs. I know it pissed people off at the beginning that Tucker went to the Dodgers and he'll end up having a great year, but I think that's a great trade-off for the Cubs. And the Cubs have the second-best closer in baseball to me. Like, other than Edwin Diaz, Daniel Palencia is the second-best closer at this point. And I know it's a small sample size, but that kid's stuff is insane. So I think that's a big advantage for the Cubs. The NL East is extraordinarily difficult, Will, because I think the Phillies roster is significantly worse than it's been the last 2 years. Significantly worse. And they're not going to have Wheeler, and who knows when Wheeler, if he's able to come back at all this year. So that scares me. The Mets, that roster is really good, but they are so different that it might, even with a pretty easy schedule in May and April, or excuse me, March and April, it may take some time to gel. And going from Diaz to Devin Williams at the end of the game scares the hell out of me. Because you go from the best closer in baseball to a guy who was barely pitchable for about 3 months last year, that's pretty scary. So I wonder even if there's a circumstance this year where Williams actually gets shoved aside for Luke Weaver at the end of the games for the Mets, which, again, Weaver had his problems last year, too, for the Yankees. So the bullpen scares me at the end. I actually think their lineup is significantly better than it was a year ago. Even though missing Alonso is a big deal, I don't think losing Nimmo was that big of a deal at all because they were the replacements they had for him were equal or better. Love that Benj is there on opening day. They'll be good. It may just take them a while. And then comes the Atlanta Braves, who have all this talent, Will, and have had the worst injury luck imaginable the last 2 years. And here we go again with the injury luck in spring training with their pitching. We do it again. This is now three straight years where their pitching has just gotten eviscerated in spring training because of the injuries. So the NL East is absurdly hard for me. But I did take the Braves. I did take the Braves. I did. I just.
Wow.
I just think when it's all said and done, they get an, even with the injury luck, I just think they have enough positive regression. And by the end of the year, Will, even though they ended up fourth in the division, they were the best team in the division the last month of the season. So I expect them to have the positive regression enough in order to win the division. I have the Mets as the top wild card, finishing second in the East. And then this got really difficult because I was between four teams for the two, the last two wild cards. Well, the teams I did not put in were the Giants, which looks good after one day, but getting a long season, and the Miami Marlins, who are really good, actually, Will. And by the end of the year last year, they were better than the Mets, the Marlins were. So I'm always scared with them, where if they're like on the fringe of a playoff contention that they're just going to sell at the deadline, and it just makes it very difficult to overcome. But that's a really good pain in the ass team to have to deal with. And I think the Phillies are due to really go backwards this year, but I don't think they'll go backwards enough in order to miss the playoffs. So I just had the Marlins missing, and that would be a pretty good price on the Marlins too to make the playoffs if you wanted to take a shot on it. I don't mind doing that. Like if they're in, like if they're legitimately in the race at the trade deadline, they're alive. They're very, very alive. But in the end, I had Milwaukee as the 5 and Philly as the 6. I just couldn't knock the Phillies out. And even though I think the Brewers roster is really not that good, that team just finds a way to get to the playoffs regardless. So pretty chalky for me other than the Braves winning the East. Dodgers 1, Cubs 2, Braves 3, Mets 4, Brewers 5, Phillies 6 in the NL.
All right, World Series. I went with the Mets defeating the
Orioles.
I can't
believe that you and I both have the Orioles in the World Series, man. Can't believe it. Like, and I didn't listen to anything to make sure I was fresh going in here, Will. Yeah, I do. Yeah, what, 75-87 on the way for Baltimore right now. So I have Baltimore losing the World Series to the Chicago Cubs. Yeah. It is so hard to repeat.
It's amazing the Orioles haven't been there because they've been pretty good. They've had a lot of good teams under Showalter, those Robbie Alomar teams. Like they lost 96 to the ALCS to the Yankees. I was thinking about this. 14, they got there. That Royals team that just, you know, had that magical Royals run. They got swept there. And the Royals actually ended up losing that World Series. But it's amazing.
Yeah, you know, look, you have a new manager. I hated Brandon High by the end. Albernez, the guy who comes over from Cleveland. We'll see. Again, it's always tricky with first-time managers. And again, there's only so much of an impact the manager can have. But you just want a guy. You don't want a guy who's completely incompetent. And Hyde was just so bad by the end and lost the locker room. Going back to the point I was making with the Dodgers, though, it is so hard to get to win three straight, Will. There's a reason that we, in this modern era of baseball, we barely see back-to-back. No less, we haven't seen three straight since 98 to 2000 with the Yankees. I just think when it's all said and done, that the break they got last year in Game 7, where you had a guy who could barely hit the ball in the infield, hit a home run to tie the game, where you had the play by a millimeter to get kind of left at the plate. Then you have Andy Páez with the open field tackle to make the catch in the outfield. And then you had got Alejandro Kirk to ground it to a double play in the extra inning to win the game. Like, that is just so much luck. And they were great and they were deserving world champion. And I'm not saying they weren't, but I just wonder if they ran out of the pixie dust. And maybe they didn't, because they went out and freaking signed the best closer and the best left-handed hitter on the market. So maybe they're just so darn good that the fact that it's so hard to win three, forget that it's hard to win two, it's hard to win a third. They might just be so darn good. They might just be, it might just be elusive for them to, they might be elusive to the fact that it's so hard to do it. But in the end, I'm picking the Cubs because when it's all said and done, Will, I like their lineup. Even though Council's a little bit overrated, I still think he's a good manager. And Danny Palencia, man, I don't think we respect the closers enough in baseball, Will. I don't think we respect the high-end closer enough. And look what happened in the World Series. The Blue Jays had Jeff Hoffman. And Jeff Hoffman ended up blowing the save in the end. And by the way, Toronto didn't do anything to rectify that this offseason. Like, I know they signed Rodgers, but he's not going to be the closer, realistically speaking. He's a gimmick guy, even though he's good. So to me, I'm going with the Cubs. I think that in the end, they have so much. They are very talented. They will probably have to trade for one more starter at the deadline, Will. But the Edward Cabrera pickup was a really shrewd move this offseason to give them more depth in that rotation. And Edward Cabrera is really good. People just don't realize that because he was on the Marlins.
He is really good.
But in the end, we're on the 10-year anniversary of 2016. Well, they're not going to have to wait over 100 years this time. I have them waiting a decade. So Cubs over Orioles for me in the World Series. 93.
How many wins for the Mets?
93, which will not be enough to win a division.
Okay.
No, I actually know. No, actually, you know, it's kind of funny, Will. Well, I'm actually all over the board of my awards this year. I am all over the place. So, like I told you, I in my official, like, written down picks, I picked Pete Alonso to win the AL MVP. But I actually, now that I'm talking through it more, I actually think Gunnar Henderson probably more likely. And I know the odds dictate that. I have a hard time envisioning Judge staying healthy the whole year. And Cal Raleigh's not going to have another year like he had last year. I actually think Julio is the better Mariner candidate this year than Raleigh in the AL side. And in the NL side, I have Juan Soto. I have Soto. Like, if the Mets are going to be in the mid to high 90s, if the Mets are going to be in the 90s this year, and if they exceed my 93, I think Soto has a 45-plus homer season. And at some point, the voters are going to have Ohtani fatigue. At some point. Or maybe they won't. But I have Soto there.
I don't know. It's just if he's – like, he has a bad year and he hits – like, his over-under is 48.5, and he's going to be in the rotation. Let's just say he pitches and he's okay on the mound, but he wins, you know, 10 or 11 games.
It's tough to overcome, Will, but 40 homers. I think if Soto has a huge year, like I think he will, I think he's the only guy that can beat him in the NL. Size – I think Skeens is repeating, even though I have the Pirates missing the playoffs. Well, if the Pirates make the playoffs, Skeens, I think, is an absolute lock to repeat as the NL Cy Young. Because they're just got, like, this is kind of the era we're in with the baseball writers, and this will sound kind of bad. I think they're a little bit lazy now, some of these guys who are voting, where they're just going to go into the narrative play, which is probably why, like, you're probably right about Ohtani. But if the Pirates make the playoffs, and even if Skeens is not quite as good as he was a year ago, He's gonna win the Cy again, unless if, like, Yamamoto's probably not gonna throw enough innings, realistically speaking. I think the Dodgers should be very careful with all their starting pitchers because the regular season doesn't matter. And then you look at the rest of the NL, there's not really another guy. Like, I'm not going for Christopher Sanchez. I think he's gonna have regression this year. Do you really want to take Sale in Atlanta? Expect him to play, say, healthy the whole year? Not really. So, like, there's not really another guy in that scenario. Like, I don't think Nolan McClain is ready in order to win the Cy Young and with the Mets. I don't think Peralta's good enough. So, like, there's not really another guy behind Skeens in the NL. AL-wise, if Skubal doesn't win it, I think we will. Don't we have to go in, like, lay into our Rangers division picks and pick one of those three guys in Texas to win the Cy if we're picking the Rangers to win the West? Like, don't we have to go full-blown into either DeGrom, Evaldi, or Gore and just hope you pick the right guy of those three if you're like us and picking the Rangers to win the AL West. So
yeah, that certainly makes some
and
sense.
And then one other award thing.
How about rookie of the year? One any of these guys thing,
JJ
it feels like
Weatherholt's
it's a loaded
going to win the NL rookie of the year. I'm just throwing that out there. And I know that may come as a surprise to some listening cuz everyone knows my Mets allegiance. McClain could very easily just have a huge year, and it's no doubt. And the Cardinals are going to be awful, awful, like potentially bottom three team in baseball, awful. But whether he made the opening day roster, he's going to be hitting the leadoff, and he's going to be legitimately their only good offensive player, Will. And I think he's going to have such a big year that it's going to be hard to the voters not to vote for him, despite the fact that he's on a horrific team. So that's the big one that I would say right now. And then isn't the AL rookie race kind of fascinating going into the year this year? Where, like, DeLauder makes the opening day roster and still is, like, 20-1 to be the rookie of the year for Cleveland. Like, and then you have your Savage there, and then you have a whole, like, there are a lot of good guys in the AL rookie race. That's one of those where I think you kind of have to see the market mature and see how it plays out this year.
Yeah, it's pretty loaded. Plus, you get these guys that aren't even in the big leagues till June.
Well, that's
going to
happen
with
Connor Griffin probably,
right?
Like,
in the race.
Like, Connor Griffin's in the minors right now. Pittsburgh will probably wait a month to bring him up to manipulate the servers prep time. And then Griffin will probably hit four homers in 10 days, and he'll be the NL rookie betting favorite right away.
Yeah, and like Chase Burns was, I remember, 100-1, and then he got called up on like a Saturday night around midnight, and a couple days later, like three innings into his first start against the Yankees, he's down to like 3-1, and it's crazy the movement you get with rookie of the year.
No,
right,
look,
I think we covered anything
very
else.
Excited
anything
for
else
this
you want
baseball
to get out
season, Will, despite the fact that we are spiraling towards labor Armageddon in the sport. This sport has not been this healthy in a very long time. And despite the fact that everyone is like, the Dodgers have broke
totally
the game,
agree.
Blah, 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 all that nonsense. No. You have a villain now. We haven't had a true villain in baseball since the early 2000s with the Yankees. And it is awesome. And if the Dodgers don't win the World Series, I can't wait to see the morons say, they still broke it. No, it's baseball. Like, it's still hard to get through it. Even if the Dodgers, like, keep in mind, Will, 2 years ago, the Padres had the Dodgers dead, up, down 2-1, down.
I always make that point.
Opener against the bullpen game.
2-1 with Cease against
the
bullpen.
And the Padres scored no runs in two games. Like, the Dodgers, like, Will, like, going into, like, because the Mets are obviously in the Phillies. I remember being texted by a friend of mine, hey, would you rather see the Dodgers or the Padres? And I didn't even hesitate. I'm like, I'd rather see the Dodgers. Like, I didn't even hesitate. Like, that was just 2 years ago. 2 years ago with that. And now, I mean, I think everyone also forgets this. Dodgers were the 3 seed last year in the NL. They were the 3. Like, everyone, like, I think everyone is like,
had to play that little tricky 2 out of 3, yeah, against,
I mean,
the Reds, and they steamrolled the Reds,
like,
but anyway, because,
like,
it was 2 out of 3, and they
had
no problems.
Lose this series, yeah. But what if Green goes out and throws, strikes out 12 guys in 7 innings? Like that wasn't an impossible scenario. Like, it's baseball. Stuff happens. Like, Ohtani could get hurt. So, we'll see, man. We'll see. We'll see what happens, Will.
Oh, last one. I got to do one more. I forgot.
No.
I had it written in my notes here.
No.
Ty
if
Simpson
happens,
to the Jets
happens,
is going
connection.
To happen or no?
It just cannot happen. Now, I don't know. You know, the Orlovsky thing was interesting, but, and I hate that I've gotten to this point with Orlovsky because I really did like him over the last few years, but that just feels like he's doing his buddies at CAA a favor because he's represented by CAA and Simpson's represented by CAA. I just, when it's all said and done, I could be wrong, and they could also pick him at 33 too, Will. That's the other thing. They could pick him at 33. But the Jets are so far away still where they're going to take a pass rusher at 2. And if somehow Sonny Styles, he won't get to 16, but like, if Mekhi Lemon gets to them in their second pick, like, how can you pass that up? Like, they should also, like, the guard from Penn State, if he's there, should be a big-time consideration as well, now that they probably need some help at that guard position. I just don't see it. I don't think it makes sense. And I think with the fact that Orlovsky's throwing that out there makes me think that CAA is panicking a little bit that Simpson is not going to go in round 1. So I don't even think the Jets would have to take him at 16. If they really want to take him at 33, or You have so many assets. If you really want them, trade back into the end of the first round with 33 and something else. But don't take him at 2 or 16. And I wouldn't take him, period. I think he stinks. You and I have talked about this. The only time Ty Simpson was good last year was when the situation was perfect for him. When there was any bit of adversity, he was awful last year. And I don't want a guy like that. I wouldn't want him on any team in the NFL. I wouldn't take him in the first three rounds, Will, but obviously he'll go in the first two and probably will still go in the first round.
Jeff, appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on. Always fun. We'll do it again soon.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, that'll do it. Rate, review, subscribe. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Jeff Parles. We will see you on Monday. We will have a Final Four to discuss. See you then.